Blog Talk Radio.
Another fine show brought to you by the Law of Attraction Radio Network. The Law of Attraction Talk Radio is the radio show that is changing the world through science and spirituality as we realize that our well-being and our happiness is through our own thoughts. The Law of Attraction Talk Radio, the Jules. Well, welcome to Law of Attraction Talk Radio. I'm Jules from beautiful Southern California. Hey, have we got a great show for you tonight featuring Dr. Stephen Farmer about his latest Hay House book called Earth Magic. You know, I've always wanted to learn more about shamanism, so I'm absolutely thrilled that I'm able to talk with Stephen tonight. And we've got some great guests coming up in the next few weeks that I wanted to let you know about. Next week, we have Marcy Shimoff. You all know about Marcy, so I don't need to tell you, and I'm very excited to have her with us. And then we're going to have Sandy Foster, who wrote the incredible best-selling book called Wildly Wealthy. Sandy went from welfare to multimillionaire in 3 short years, so you're going to want to hear this fantastic, inspirational story that will set anyone on the right track. Then we're going to have Lisa Gibbons from Entertainment Tonight and the Lisa Gibbons Show to talk about her mother's Alzheimer's ordeal and all the new alternative medicine therapies that can now help people with Alzheimer's. Then we have the director and producer of the incredible new movie called The Living Matrix. Oh, this is going to be fantastic. If you haven't seen the DVD, The Living Matrix, go out and get it, because I am absolutely thrilled to be able to bring you more information on how science is now changing the existing medical profession. You know, what's so fascinating is that this is the same stuff that we have been learning in metaphysics for the last 3,000 years, and science is finally getting it. So get ready to be wowed when we interview the director and producers of The Living Matrix. So much is happening and so much wonderful information is flowing. So just grab on to it and expand your mind while listening to the Law of Attraction Talk Radio through the Law of Attraction Radio Network. In today's world, more and more people are turning to the internet to make money. If you're serious about creating a new source of income, then make your website an easy site. TheEasySite.com is even a great way to rejuvenate your existing website and increase traffic flow while maintaining the site yourself. It's easy. Attract new income your way with a professional website the easy way. Remember, TheEasySite.com. That's www.theeasysite.com. Access your forgotten abilities to create a happy and joyful life that is filled with abundance through the Law of Attraction Radio Network. Listen to shows that will inspire and uplift your consciousness, required to fulfill your desires, by downloading your favorite shows to your MP3 player. Join us at loaradionetwork.com. That's loaradionetwork.com. Okay, we're back. Let's talk with Stephen Farmer, PhD, who's the author of the best-selling book, Earth Magic, and the Power Animal Oracle Cards. Dr. Farmer is a shamanic practitioner, hypnotherapist, ordained minister, former college professor, and former psychotherapist. He conducts workshops on a variety of topics related to earth magic, shamanism, and earth-centered spirituality. Having studied and explored shamanism, spiritual transformation, trauma recovery, and men's issues extensively, Dr. Farmer brings a wealth of skills and experience to his writing, teaching, and spiritual healing. Welcome, Stephen, to the Law of Attraction Talk Radio.
Well, thank you for having me, Jules. I appreciate you having me on the air.
Boy, I really loved your book, Earth Magic.
Thank you, yeah.
So my first question to you is, what exactly is a shaman?
A shaman, it's hard to capture, Jules, the idea of a shaman in just a few words, but essentially the word itself comes from Siberia, a particular area in Siberia. And it's been defined in different ways. Healer, the shaman is, I think of the shaman as, in indigenous communities as well as those communities in which our long ago ancestors dwelled. The shaman was the go-to person when you experienced any emotional or physical illness.
Mm.
And the shaman's job really was to address that and try to effect a cure. So he was a combination medical doctor, psychiatrist, herbologist, you know, all of the above. The shaman's particular gift or capacity, and again, remember, in the old days, and I'm talking about the really old days, there weren't hospitals, there weren't specialists. You go to a doctor these days, and they'll go, well, you got to go see a dermatologist, and then you have to go see a cardiologist. You know, et cetera, et cetera. So that this was the shaman was all of these in a sense combined. But the unique gift of the shaman was the capacity or the ability to travel to spirit world and there work with spirit helpers, various spirit helpers, to return their teachings and their guidance and certainly their healing capabilities to return that to the community or the village or the tribe. And their effect to cure with whoever might be ailing, whether it be one person or it be a family or the entire village.
Wow, that's really interesting. I had no idea. What makes it so fascinating that here you are, a retired college professor, a prominent psychotherapist, and yet you're a shaman. It must really be amazing to many, many people.
Oh, absolutely. It's interesting, Jules, because, I don't know, 25 years ago, if you had said to me, well, one day you're going to be talking to spirit guides, particularly animal spirit guides, but also other spirit guides, you're going to be talking to plant spirits, and you're going to be doing this healing work from not just an emotional, mental level, but you're going to be doing it from a spiritual level, I would have laughed. I said, yeah, right. I've got, as you said, the education, the credentials, a bachelor's and a master's, as well as a doctoral, PhD. And I spent, 30-plus years as a psychotherapist, and I was a pretty good one. I mean, people kept showing up, and I think I helped people a lot. But I found a shaman, I started that back in the 70s. And then somewhere along the road, I found shamanism, and I went, oh, my goodness, this is very intriguing. And more than intriguing, I jumped in, and I discovered that what a shamanic practitioner does is to work with those spirit guides when an individual is sick or is diseased in some way, and I use that term broadly. That's my job, is to go and discover not just the psychological, but also the spiritual cause of the illness. And my belief, and based on my experience, is every illness, whether it's mental, emotional, physical, there's a spiritual basis for it, if you would. Mm-hmm. Now, I do workshops. I do other kinds of presentations, speeches, and I also do private consultations. And I got to say, I think that, and I'm no longer a practicing psychotherapist. I retired about 7 or 8 years ago, and have this what I think is a fairly unique blend of the psychological psychotherapy background, and integrating that with the shamanic, so that I'm a hypnotherapist also. I can use hypnosis. I've got a bag full of tools in my medicine kit, so to speak, that I can use. And I find it's just, the term itself is coming into our culture, Jules, more and more. No, not necessarily in the broader culture, but certainly in the, you could say, New Age metaphysical culture, where people have more and more people have taken interest in the shamanic wisdom that's available. I think it's also part of, it's an earth-based, if you will, an earth-based spirituality as well as a healing modality. So as we turn our attention more and more to the, shall we say, the dilemmas that we're in here on this planet at this point, I think it offers a different sort of philosophy and idea about how we can work not only just with the material beings on the earth, but also the spirit of those beings, to assist us in doing what we can to revise our relationship, our relationship as human beings with the planet.
I believe it was Louise Hayes who brought it out to the public knowledge of the mind-body connection, but you're taking it a step further and you're saying that the animal and spirit guides can actually help bring you into alignment, or your body into alignment with your emotions. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's actually very well put, Jules. We go spirit, mind, body. All of us, certainly all beings, human beings, animal beings, plant beings, and some people would even say rock beings and the entire planet, but certainly humans, animals, and plants are expressions of the life force of spirit. We can say that, well, we're all one, and there's the great oneness, if you will, and yet there's certainly a lot of different expressions of that oneness.
Right.
As for human beings, as for us humans, certainly our life force can be severely out of alignment. Our spirit can be severely out of alignment or incongruent, if you will, with how we express ourselves in the world, mentally, physically, etc. So in a very real sense, the shaman's job is to sort of help that realign by going to the level of spirit, if you will, and create work with healing that rupture, if you will. For instance, I'll give you a for instance.
Mm-hmm.
One of the causes of illness in this paradigm, the shamanic paradigm, one of the spiritual causes, I should be clear about that, one of the spiritual causes of illness is what we call soul loss. What to view the soul as, oh gosh, a holographic image, like the iconic Obi-Wan Kenobi, you know, help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi, you know, that three-dimensional picture of Princess Leia, or Leia, however you say that. Well, that the soul is, that's a good analogy, if you will, for the soul. The holographic image is created by shooting a laser through a very, very special film. And then when it goes through that film, that's what shows up, is this three-dimensional image. If you chip away the film, just a little tiny chip, you still get the image. But it's a little fuzzier. So if you chip it more, you still get the image, but it's a little fuzzier. So the more that's chipped away, the fuzzier the image is. But, you know, until you don't have any more film, of course, there's still an image. That's a pretty good analogy of what soul fragmentation or soul loss is. It's like a piece of your soul will fragment off or dissociate. Often, not always, but often it's when we go through a traumatic experience, a serious car accident, for instance, or if there's been some physical abuse or something like that. Sometimes what can happen is that a piece of that soul, it's like there's a part of you that goes, whoa, I don't want to be here for this. You know, who would want to be, you know, in a situation like this? Psychologically, we call that dissociation.
Mm.
It's a very natural phenomena. There's a physiological basis for it. And what I'm suggesting here, not suggesting, I'm telling you, this is the way it works, is that at a spiritual level, too, there's a piece of the soul that fragments off. Now, sometimes that piece comes back when it's safe to do so. It may return into the overall or the intact soul, but often that part sort of wanders around in this strange quasi world that the shaman's job is to determine, with the help of his spirit guides and spirit helpers, what is the soul piece that most needs to return. I'll share with you a short story of that. I treated a client whose, of course, name I will anonymous. But a woman that she's dealing with a pretty serious life-threatening illness is doing actually quite well, and I've done a couple of actually long-distance treatments with her. And one of the more recent ones was I was taken, in addition to some other work that we did, shamanic work that we did, I was taken into the spirit world, and sometimes that's called non-ordinary reality, or NOR, but it's basically the spirit world in a particular way. I was taken by my guides to, there was this sort of 16-year-old, or give or take a year, that was singing away, was on a hillside and was singing, of all things, was singing, "The hills are alive with the sound of music." I thought that was kind of comical, and I thought my spirit guides were kind of, you know, joking with me, but they kept pointing back and saying, no, this is the part that needs to be returned. And this 16-year-old piece was, she was happy, she was dancing, she was singing. She would go down to the lake, it looked like a lake, and she would jump into the water, you know, even though the water was cold. Anyway, so I basically brought this piece back, and then I guess you would say installed it, if you will, long distance or in remote healing with this woman, and she actually experienced a sensation when I did so. And then later I explained to her about this part. She said, "Oh, my God." She said, "Yeah, that's about when I shut down. I was anorexic. I started, you know, I used to be a really happy child up to about that point. It was about 15 or 16 years old when I shut down because of some religious proscriptions, religious, she adopted a certain religion and then became very fundamentalist about it, and so she started wearing her clothing differently and became very serious. Well, that was validation for this soul part that had fragmented.
Mm-hmm.
The good news was that, okay, as I told her, I said, the good news is that she's back with you. And part of what she brought with her, if you will, the soul piece, is that sense of adventure, you know, of taking some chances, of jumping into the cold water, whether literal or metaphorical. She really understood. She got it. You know, my client got it. She got that, okay, this is the part that I left behind. So that wasn't necessarily a traumatic experience, but it was almost a choice, if you will, to release that soul fragment.
Wow.
They missed each other a lot. And, you know, to be continued, you know, we'll see how. I always ask my clients to report back to me after about 3 weeks, and it takes a few weeks usually for that new aspect or that returned aspect to. Very, very powerful healing. I've seen it again and again and again and again. And the interesting thing, Jules, is it doesn't matter whether you believe this or not, as long as you're willing to give it a shot. I do quite a few phone consultations, and sometimes it's I do something called Power Animal Readings, which I've got a couple of Oracle card decks, the Power Animal Oracle cards, and also the newer one is called the Messages from Your Animal Spirit Guides Oracle cards. So I use those as sort of a bridge or a takeoff point. I'll do power animal readings, and then if it's appropriate and necessary, I'll do treatments. I also see people here in my home office in Laguna Beach, California. So I've done both, and I enjoy both. I like the face-to-face, and I like the phone consultations, and yeah, I'm getting results. That's what counts.
Well, that's good to know. People can visit you in Laguna Beach, or they can call you by phone to get some help and healing. That's wonderful to know. Let's talk about earth magic a little bit. I found it to be like an encyclopedia of information.
Yes, I would agree with that. It's shall we say, chock full of different elements of spiritual healing. The subtitle of Earth Magic is Ancient Shamanic Wisdom for Healing Yourself, Others, and the Planet. And the basis for it is shamanism and the shamanic paradigm, and yet it does incorporate some other elements or aspects, some of which were based on my work as a psychotherapist, Mm-hmm. There's a fascinating, I mean, the reader can take and either read it through, or what I advise is, well, go to the chapters that interest you. You know, it doesn't have to be sequential. There's the characteristics of all spiritual healers that I think are really effective. There's about what a shaman truly is, because again, I described what a shaman's job really is, but I got to tell you something even more fundamental than that, as the shaman's assignment. That is, in the days gone by and in indigenous communities today, the shaman's job is to mediate the relationship between the human community and the natural world.
Wow.
So when that is out of balance, in other words, the community has taken from the natural world more than they've given back, and given back isn't just material things. It could be prayer, ceremony, etc., gratitude. When that's out of balance, then the way that shows up is illness in the community. In other words, when things are out of whack in the human community, the shaman's first thing that he or she does is to consult with his spirit guides and say, okay, something's out of balance here. What do we need to do to reset the balance?
You're talking about an entire community. How fascinating.
Yeah. So that's the first thing that the shaman has to address, is that imbalance, and then how to correct it.
Wow.
There's some fascinating stories, a particularly fascinating story in Earth Magic about that in the Inuit community, how this, food is a little harder to come by way up north.
Mm-hmm.
You don't go down to your local supermarket, your Albertsons or whatever, or Whole Foods. So, I'm giving you a condensed version of this story, but basically the shaman goes through this ceremony where all the adults in the community are gathered around in his particular igloo, and he travels down to the goddess of the sea. There has to persuade her and coax her into revealing what the problem is and how to correct it so that his people can eat. And what happens is he comes back up, you know, from the bottom of the sea after consulting, and said, there's been some transgressions, you know, we'll call them sins, but it's a different meaning of sin, but there's been some transgressions here. And the goddess of the sea said, everybody has to confess to those transgressions. So there's all these people in the igloo, and they're going, well, I did this, you know, I did this, and I did this. They're not shamed for it. They're forgiven. Because by doing so, they've appeased the goddess of the sea, and therefore the community can eat. She'll send the seals and all of the food from the sea and the fish, because they've allowed themselves to do this sort of mass confessional, and then nothing is ever spoken about this again. You know, I took my neighbor's I took my neighbor's knife, you know, whatever it may be, or you know, I had sex with someone else that I shouldn't have had sex with, and it all comes out in this amazing ceremony of confessional. And what that does is that rebalances things so the community can eat. That's not a good example of an illness. And we're out of balance. You know, it's not that anybody has to be particularly. That's what I like about this book, Earth Magic, is you don't have to be particularly interested in a shamanic path, I think, to get some really good stuff, if you will, some good information, and there's exercises in it that you can use, again, whether you're interested in the shamanic path or not. That's a story in Earth Magic that's just fascinating. A lot more details to it in the book, too.
In the book, you talk quite a bit about animal guides, and you have those oracle cards. Do they go hand in hand with the book?
Yeah, an aspect of shamanism that I find that people, again, don't need to be especially interested in shamanism, but how many of us love animals in some way, shape, or form, whether they're domesticated animals or the little birds or the hummingbird that flies around, or you know, whatever that may be. Everybody loves some type of animals. Most everybody, I guess I should qualify that. So what we do with animal spirit guides is we look not just at the animals, but what about the spirit of those animals? And then how can they help us in our day-to-day life? And I'm absolutely convinced, Jules, that spirit wants to help us out, and certainly the spirit of our animal kin, our brothers, I call them brothers and sisters, our animal brothers and sisters, they want to help us out. And what we're talking about with animal spirit guides is that within any animal that shows up to you as in the physical form or in the symbolic form, when an animal shows up to you in an unusual way or repeatedly in a short period of time, the spirit of that animal species is trying to reach you, teach you, to guide you. For instance, the hummingbird is one of my favorite examples. I've heard this story probably 4 or 5 times from various people. The hummingbird that hovers maybe 1.5 feet from your nose,
mm-hmm.
and hangs there, as hummingbirds can do, for 15 to 20 seconds. Now, the logical explanation might be that, oh, she's guarding her nest. You know, she views you as a potential predator, so she's, in her little way, trying to intimidate you. You know, that's one story. But I got to tell you, that's kind of boring. More interesting one, and this is really more, if you think of the language of the soul and how the world talks to us, you know, we just got to learn how to be better listeners, is my pitch. Here's an example of how to be a better listener. You look at this hummingbird, and you go, oh, wait a minute, you know, I don't know, she's guarding her nest or whatever, but let me try this on, that maybe there's some significance in what she's trying to tell me. So I can do a couple of different things. One is, I can go to my book, the Animal Spirit Guides book, and look up hummingbird and see what possible meanings there are. I could certainly go to the Power Animal cards has hummingbird in it. I could check that out, or the Power Animals book. Or, you know, I could go to the website, the internet, and Google hummingbird totem or hummingbird animal spirit guide, whatever. But here's kind of an interesting way is to think, first off, close your eyes, take a deep breath, and ask in your mind, spirit of hummingbird, what are you trying to tell me? What is the message? And when you do that, then you pay attention to everything that happens. Everything that happens might be you get an image in your mind's eye. You maybe hear sort of a whisper in your ear. And that's how spirit sometimes communicates to us. I might get a thought in my mind. I might just get a feeling. Like, for instance, I know that when I see a hummingbird in that, it doesn't matter whether it's a message or not, but when I see a hummingbird, I almost inevitably smile. And often that's hummingbird's message to us when she shows up in an unusual way or repeatedly, is lighten up. Don't take things quite so seriously. Another possible meaning is you got to be a little more flexible. And you can discern these meanings, too, sometimes by thinking about the qualities or characteristics of the animal. For instance, hummingbird, yeah, it makes you smile. How could you not smile when you see a hummingbird?
Right.
And another is that the flexibility, that she can fly left, right, up, down. It's the only bird that can fly backwards. So that implies a certain flexibility is needed. I can't tell you, Jules, how many times I've been visited by, well, I can tell you, I've got story after story, actually, not only mine, but others, that visitations, if you will, from not only animals, but the spirit of those animals have a message to deliver. I mean, I had a hawk fly into my office one time. Crows lately have been showing up, flying right across my vision, you know, 5-10 feet away. And I always, you know, because of the work that I do, I look for the signs or the messages from these signs. I think people do that in other ways too, but certainly animal spirit guides are one way.
Wow, that is so fascinating. You know, I've got this family of raccoons who come into my backyard, and it's really amazing. Here I'm in the middle of the city, but I've got this deck in the backyard, and so they come and they're in the backyard, and then when they're hungry, they'll come up to my glass window and they'll kind of, like, they're waving, "Hi, I'm here, come and feed me." You know, it's so funny. I guess I need to be asking their spirits, what is it that you are trying to tell me?
Or, you know, if you'd like, we can talk about it a little bit here.
Oh, wonderful.
First off, again, think of the characteristics of the animal. That's one way to see the animal, not just as a physical animal, or sometimes a symbol, like you see an animal on TV, but you see an unusual way or repeatedly. In and of itself, for instance, raccoons, you know, it's springtime, they're getting out. We've had a few here. You know, we had one guy that keeps showing up and got a little fountain out here that he left some paw prints he'd visited one night. They're night animals. They have this little mask across their face. You know, they look like bandits, and sometimes we think of them as bandits when they dig into the trash. They're extremely resourceful. Like you said, even in a urban or a semi-urban area, they show up. They show up in the woods. They show up all over the place. So the key word for raccoon, the spirit, not just the animal, but when that raccoon or the family of raccoons shows up at your back door and sort of waves at you, like you said, Jules, I would say that's it's up to you. But, you know, if that's unusual, you would then go, okay, what's the meaning of this? One meaning that often shows up when raccoon visits, when I get a visitation or when I consult with a raccoon as an animal spirit guide, is resourcefulness. Raccoon is saying to you, Jules, one thing that he's saying, I'm sure of it, is that you have all the resources you need. That and we don't need to go into details, but you know, there's an area in your life that you're struggling with. And raccoon is a reminder that you may get somewhat, shall we say, narrow in your the solutions to the problem.
Oh, yes. It has to do with frustrations with the computer.
So raccoon is a reminder to know, broaden, and I'm doing this with my hands, as I guess I'm doing a little reading here. I hope that's okay.
Oh, love it.
But I'm seeing my hands broaden, which means to broaden the scope of your vision, and particularly your peripheral vision, to look outside where you tend to focus, which is straight ahead, but also to be able to see those things that are in elements that are in the larger 180-degree circle that you can see with your peripheral vision. Raccoon is also saying the mask again. We look at the mask and go, wait a minute, what's the meaning there? What's the possible meaning for you? And one possible meaning for you, and I think there's some accuracy to this, is to... that there's someone you're dealing with right now that sort of masks their feelings and their thoughts, that they remain a little bit. They're not really a bandit or a thief. They're not taking things from you, that metaphor, but they're sort of masking themselves, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
So it's saying to you, just be aware of that. You know, just, you don't need to do anything with it particularly, but just be aware of that. Let's see if there's anything else. Family. You use the term family, and what Raccoon is saying to me right now is about that family right now is really important to you, and it's important to maintain those connections, like highlight those. You do already, but it's like really, there's something about staying in communication with your family, and even that one person that you'd rather not communicate with. Maybe the same person that's wearing the mask, too. So now I cheated a little bit in that I went beyond just what I started to say is the raccoon is a metaphor, you know, and looking at the animal into, I sort of, like I said, slipped into a reading, and I trust that that's okay.
Absolutely. It's really right on target, too. Oh, my goodness.
Thing, though, you know, my message to everybody is you, too, can learn to do this. You know, it's not, it takes a little practice, and many of the products I put out, and to some degree even the new book, Earth Magic, but certainly the oracle cards, animal spirit guides, some of the other products, Jules, are, I look at them as bridges, you know, that you use them as much as long as you need to, hopefully and ideally to stimulate that sort of resonance with the animal spirit guides. And you can also call on these animal spirit guides. That's the amazing thing. For instance, if you feel stuck with something, you can call on the spirit of Raccoon. Raccoon, help me out. I'm not seeing the bigger picture here. I'm not seeing other possibilities, other solutions. Or you call on Dolphin. You know, if you're having trouble with communication, you can call on the spirit of Dolphin for communication. You can call on Hummingbird to just be a little more playful and not take things so seriously.
Do you work with the angels as well?
Yeah, I work with a couple of the archangels. If I lose something, I call on if I think I've lost something, I should say, I might call on Archangel Shamuel, for instance. He's one of my favorites, and Archangel Michael is another one that I call on. Archangel Michael shows up quite a bit. He's non-denominational. You know, that's not the point. But you're right, some people get a little freaked about, you know, it's just, ooh, that feels a little too religious or has too many religious connotations. The other thing I find is that, you know, people want to connect, they want to make more of a connection with the earth, want to reconnect, if you will, or even another way to say is remember the connection with the natural world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's been forgotten, and we are unfortunately a forgetful species. So certainly part of my mission, an aspect of it that's very much in alignment with the what's going on in the world today is to encourage people to reconnect. And that's one way that we can do so is through the animals, and specifically the animal spirits or the spirit of those animals.
Wow, this is so fascinating. I'm going to really start paying attention to my surroundings. You know, I guess that's the way it should be. There's all these messages out there that I just have been letting slide. Tell me about plant consciousness and plant spirits. I've never heard of this before.
Yeah, it's there's a couple of aspects about that. That's that story that's in Earth Magic. I don't know if you happen to read it, but Cleve Baxter is his name, Cleve Baxter.
Mm-hmm.
He was a FBI, polygraph expert, you know, the lie detector thing. And his secretary, the story goes, his secretary just happened to pick up a couple of plants that were on sale. And one was, and I'm not sure I'm pronouncing this correctly, but it's a Dracaena or Dracaena cane, you know, one of those long, tall cane type of plants.
Mm-hmm.
And so he got, just out of curiosity, it's one of those, like, accidental, in quotes, discoveries. Just out of curiosity, he put his galvanometer, which is a measure of the moisture. You know, when somebody's hooked up to a lie detector machine, the galvanometer is on their palms to detect any sweat. In other words, moisture. So he put a few of these on the cane, you know, going up the length of the plant all the way to the top. But he noticed something very curious. He watered the plant, and he figured, well, it would take a few minutes, you know, to get to the top of the plant. But what was happening, and this was a startling discovery, is that right away there was something that was registering at the top of the plant. And he went, there's no way that water can get up there, but it's registering something. So he began to think, well, maybe this plant has some sort of way of perceiving things that, you know, we just typically don't allow for. So he started doing some various experiments, one of which was he took a box of matches. He went and got a box of matches and lit a match and held it close to the plant in a threatening manner, and the needle went off the charts. Isn't that amazing? In other words, the plant registered something of fear, and then he put the matches away, and the needle went back down. So he went on to experiment in various ways. And basically, he came up with the term, it wasn't extrasensory perception. He called it primal perception, something so basic that we don't even, as human beings, really allow or know that plants perceive. And we have all heard stories about singing to plants. We found out that plants do well with certain kinds of music, and there are certain kinds of music they do not do well with, one of those being heavy metal.
Ooh.
So you don't want to play Metallica to your plants.
It's good to know.
Yeah, it's good to know. Just keep that in mind. You know. But they like other, they like classical. They like other kinds of soothing kind of music, etc. But he found that they did react to music like that, like heavy metal plant. So that's one aspect, and you know, it's something that you know, like I say, we've all heard stories. People talk to their plants. People sing to them. They really do perceive something from us.
Now this has got me a little nervous. What happens when you eat a salad or a leaf or a plant? What happens?
Really good question. What do you think?
Wow, I don't know. I've never really thought about it before. I guess it's time to start thinking about it.
Great. I think we all should. You know, life eats life. Joseph Campbell said that. I think that we can get in sort of a almost a dogmatic way with about eating, for instance, animal flesh. But let's face it, you know, based on this alone, what we've just been talking about, yeah, the plants feel something. But life eats life, the way of the natural world. The tragedy and the travesty, Jules, is the way that we treat the animals that end up on our plates. You know, if you're vegan or vegetarian, that may not be the case. But on the, I do my best at every meal, and I can't say every 100%, but I do my best at every meal to offer a prayer of thanks to both the plant beings and the animal beings that have contributed to my ability to sustain my life yet another day.
Mm.
So yeah, it makes you, like you said, Jules, it makes you think twice. Good, you know. The only exception might be fruit. You know, the apple tree gives up apples. Says, here, eat them. Spread the seeds.
yeah.
You know, birds eat them, and then they, when they go and it passes through their body, they spread the seeds, you know, and they're hoping that we human beings do that too, but we may not. But my point is that most plants, and certainly all animals, if you're an omnivore, and I myself am an omnivore, I think I try my best. If I eat very little meat, by the way, mostly fish, and mostly I got to say my diet is primarily plants. Probably about 75% plants, and then every once in a while just a fish taco sounds really good. And I listen to that, and I figure, well, my body needs that extra, you know, that extra dose of your protein. But the blessing that I say typically goes something like this. I thank Great Spirit, thank you. Thank you for your contributions. I thank all of the beings who contributed to this meal that have given their bodies so that I could sustain myself for yet another day. Thank you, Earth Mother, for your abundance. Thank you for the blessings of all of the abundance in my life. And I ask blessing for this food, that the spirit and the souls of these animals, plants that have contributed, animals and animal and or plants, be allowed to move quickly and gracefully to spirit world. Something like that. The idea there is to pause and pay attention and to be grateful for the beings that have given their lives. When you pull up a carrot, does it go ouch? You know, when you cut into a head of a lettuce or you cut it off from the garden, you know, does it go ouch? I don't know. Something, though. And if I cut down a tree, what happens? You know, it doesn't mean, you know, don't cut down trees, but my God, you know, we're just really out of control with that, right?
Yeah, going into your last chapter, I believe, you talk about healing the planet, and you mention that the planet would be better off if everyone would stop eating animals. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Beef is a good one. My God. All of the, I forget the statistics, I'd have to look it up, but statistically, just the amount of beef that we consume, number one, the amount of meat, period. You know, the human body does not need as much meat as as we've come to believe. We just don't need it. Our bodies don't require it. I think the estimates I've seen about the amount of protein we need is anywhere from 10% of our diet to maybe about 20% at the very, very most. And most of that seems to land right at about 15%, somewhere in between. So that's one thing, is to stop eating beef. Second, if you do choose to eat beef, check and see. Find out. Do some research. Find out, was this pastured beef? You know, was this cow or this bull or wherever? I don't even know where we get beef. See, there's a problem with modern civilization. We don't happen to see what has to take place in order to get that hamburger. You know, I think if people saw what had to take place, a lot more of us would become vegetarians, I suspect.
Mm-hmm.
But more than that, it's how the animal is treated. That's my pitch, and I'm so grateful for those of us in California that we not only got this initiative on the ballot, but it passed successfully. What a concept, you know, to have chickens have room in their cages, spread their wings, not have their beaks taken off, you know, so they won't peck other chickens. Thank God for the people of California, you know, and the people that voted for this. You know, I'm not sure more laws are the greatest thing in the world, but, you know, being an advocate of this sort of thing, I'm really happy to see that. You know, our animal brothers and sisters, they are the domesticated animals, the ones that end up, pasture animals their whole bodies are geared to eating grass and wild grass on pastures. But what are we doing? We're feeding them corn. Wait a minute, what's wrong with this picture? You know, they're being fed corn because there's this abundance of corn. Anybody wants to read further about this, go to read Michael Pollan's, P-O-L-L-A-N-S, book called The Omnivore's Dilemma, or another book I'd start with actually is In Defense of Food. It's fascinating. So yeah, that's one thing that we can do stop eating, at least don't eat so much, and if you do, then just find out if it's pastured beef and if the animal had a good life, you know, instead of being shackled and collared and forced to eat something that its body was not suited for.
Or hormones.
With hormones, right. I was just looking at the statistics. Nearly 80% of the agricultural land in the U.S. is used to raise animals for food. Raising livestock is responsible for 18% of the global greenhouse gas emissions. More than all the world's transportation sources combined. So anyway, the point being is there's some of these tips that are in there. A good friend of mine, Chris Prelitz, has a book called Green Made Easy, and it's part of what I do with Earth Magic is I say, well, here's some information about this. Now, if you want to learn more, go here.
Good.
If you want to learn more, go here. If you want to learn more, go here. So I see it as sort of a conduit, if you will, to other resources. And
yes, it's truly a great directory. You had mentioned that drumming, rattling, dancing, singing, meditating, they all play a major role in the shamanic practice.
Good question, Jules. Yes, they are. The way that the shaman or the shamanic practitioner travels with his consciousness, if you will, into non-ordinary reality is by going into what you might call a shamanic trance. Shamanic trance is, you know, trance, first of all, is no big deal. We go in and out of trance probably a few times every day, you know, daydreaming, spacing out, getting enraptured with looking at the ocean, you know, listening to the waves, whatever. So the shamanic trance is just another term for a particular kind of trance that's induced in a variety of ways, depending upon the particular practitioner. Drumming, for instance, or rattling, any kind of rhythmic, monotonous rhythm, you know, just at 4 to 7, let's call it drumming, 4 to 7 beats per second.
Mm-hmm.
It's been scientifically demonstrated and shown that at that rate of 4 beats per second, which is about like that,
mm-hmm.
you sustain that. You just do that monotonous, steady rhythm for anywhere from 10 to 12 minutes, that most people will go into a delta state of brain wave cycles. I'm not saying that very well, but we operate particularly in a beta state. You know, when we're alert, wide awake, it's anywhere from 14 on up cycles per second, if we were to measure it with that kind of an instrument. Some people say 14 to 30. It varies from different things I've read. But then your brain, you know, when you get drowsy or sleepy or that those few moments before you fall off to sleep or when you first wake up, you're like I was this morning for about 10 minutes, you're in alpha state, which is, means about 7 to 14 cycles per second. You know, you just you don't feel quite as alert, et cetera. You're in a slight trance. Drumming for 10 to 12 minutes in that way will induce what's called a delta state, and that's 4 to 7 cycles per second as measured. Isn't it interesting that the drum rate that we're talking about is 4 to 7 beats per second, and the delta rhythm is 4 to 7 cycles per second? In other words, shamans have known for thousands of years what scientists have only recently discovered. Yeah, the dancing is another method. That dancing, singing, chanting, etc., these are all methods to induce this in an altered state of consciousness. And in that way, it allows spirit through in some way, whether it be at a powwow, gathering of nations, or whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I did some training in Tibetan shamanism. excuse me. And the fellow who was doing the training, when he would lead us in what's called the shamanic journey, which is essentially what I've described, is where you go into this altered state and send your consciousness into non-ordinary reality, spirit world, and there you receive teachings and guidance from your spirit helpers. This fella, Larry Peters, who, by the way, is also was also a psychologist, practicing psychologist until about 20 years ago, 20, 25 years ago, and he went to Nepal and discovered Tibetan shamanism and worked with it ever since. But he had bells on, he had little almost like they were like castanet things on his outfit, on his vest that he wore. He was drumming on the drum. There was an extra rhythm on the drum. He had something else going on. So he was up there dancing, and then he would chant, and he was playing his drums and had this, they sound like wind chimes almost, to induce this altered state of consciousness. In all of us who were taking the training, as well as himself. So drumming, dancing, singing, chanting, all of these can be means to induce the shamanic state of consciousness.
This is so fascinating. So the purpose of getting into that altered state and to contact the spirit world is so that we can go beyond this third dimensional world and see something beyond us.
It's well put. It yes, that's well stated and a good summary. It's again the world that you could call it spirit world. The more exact term might be non-ordinary reality. For instance, if I were to do a journey, I do at least 3-4 times a week. Is my path. You know, that some people meditate, some people do this or whatever, but, you know, journeying is the method that seems to work the best, particularly for the kind of work that I'm doing and my assignment in this world. First thing I do is I have a drumming on the computer and also on my iPod, and I have a CD also, so I've got access to a tape of that sort of monotonous drumming, and I've also got I've done this myself. There's a CD in the book Power Animals, and there's also a CD that standalone CD called Messages from Your Animal Spirit Guides, where there's some drumming. So I would put on one of these, and then I would put a blindfold on to just darken out the light. Call on Raven, which is my power animal, and you'd asked about this earlier. The power animal, whether you're again shamanic stuff or not, power animal is like your main animal spirit guide, and Raven is one of four that I work with, and he's the one I call on along with Wolf for my journeys. And I say, maybe if you're my client, I say, well, I want to investigate, you know, if there's any healing needed, if Jules needs any healing, what I can do. And then they will basically communicate to me what the healing is, and this is all based on your agreement and your choice to do so. They would then take me to give me the necessary information so that I could perform what I needed to perform for the spiritual healing.
Mm-hmm.
I'd come back out of that trance after I've gone to non-ordinary reality with these spirit guides, and do whatever we need to do and get you fixed up. That's the thing of it is, I want to get people fixed up.
Wow, I'm sure there's a lot of listeners out there right now who want to be able to do the exact same thing you're doing. And that's why your book is so wonderful, because it's the perfect resource to find out, to get the tools, actually.
Yeah, there's some great, there's some exercises in there, and it goes from fairly simple ones to more, shall we say, advanced ones. I generally put a precaution on some of these, saying, get some training, you know. But there are some simple ones. You mentioned the latter part of the last part of the book. There's some processes you can do for healing our Earth Mother.
Yes.
Or as Wallace Blackout says, he was asked this some years ago, how do we heal the Earth, Wallace Blackout? And he said, well, we don't need to do anything to heal her. We just got to stop making her sick.
Yeah.
So that's number one. Stop making her sick. You know, do what we can do. Stop eating, you know, all so much meat and so much beef, especially because of what we just talked about. Recycle as best you can. Change your light bulbs. And second, I do believe, in spite of the quote from Wallace Black Elk, there's things that we can do to affect, or in addition to the physical things we can do, like, recycle as much as you possibly can. Get educated, you know, learn other things you can do.
Mm-hmm.
But also, at a spiritual level, there's things you can do. There's a wonderful earth blessing, for instance. And that saying thank you and expressing your gratitude and blessing for the food that you eat every meal. If possible, do that. Just a thankfulness for what Earth Mother provides for us. Second is that you can do a land blessing, and that's that if you have a piece of property, whether you're renting or you so-called own it, I'm not sure anybody can really own the earth, but okay, that's how we talk about these things. You know, you have a piece of property or something, is you can get, let's say, a small group of friends to do this, is you do a prayer circle first, you ask for all the spirit guides to come in that would help you with this blessing. And then everybody walks around, how would I describe this, where you're slowly walking around with your palms facing towards the land and the various elements of the land. Now that you've built up some power by calling in spirit guides and spirit helpers, whoever it may be, angels, animal spirit guides, ascended masters, it doesn't matter, but all the beings that you work with,
mm-hmm.
and then you walk around and you basically, it's kind of like doing Reiki with the land.
Mm.
So you do an energy blessing. You walk around just thinking those thoughts, you know, thank you, Earth Mother. Thank you for the bounty. Thank you for the blessings. Thank you for the abundance. I ask my spirit helpers and spirit guides to, through me, to offer you blessings.
Wow, if we could get people to do this while they're out walking, what a wonderful healing proposition for the earth. This would be great. Stephen, before we go any further, and we're almost out of time, please tell everyone how they can get your book, Earth Magic, and those oracle cards as well.
My website, drstephenfarmer.com, people can go there, and there's articles on there. It's there's a way to sign up for my newsletter once a month that comes out once a month. It keeps up my schedule. I've got a pretty busy schedule coming up this year, and love to see folks join me for either book signings or workshops. Since I'm going to be in New York pretty soon, coming up towards the end of the month, I'm going to be at the Open Center doing a Friday night plus a two-day workshop, and East-West Bookshop. And then I join my good friend Jeremy Donovan in Sedona right after that to participate in some ceremonies he has going there with some Australian folks, which is where he's from. People can refer to, you know, go to drstephenfarmer.com to get the book, of course, hayhouse.com or amazon.com.
Wonderful. And when you go to the website, be sure to look at some of those articles, some really terrific information on drstephenfarmer.com website. And for personal healing sessions?
They would speak with my assistant, Raven, Jen Raven. to arrange for either phone or face-to-face consultation.
We are out of time. Thank you, Stephen, for coming on and introducing us to the shaman practices. This has been fascinating.
Well, thank you, Jules. I appreciate it.
To all the wonderful listeners, have a great week.
Thank you for joining us on Law of Attraction Talk Radio with Jules. For more information, go to Law of Attraction Radio Network or LawofAttractionTools.com.